Okay.
Hi, this is Stuttering John Melendez from The Howard Stern Show. And for some really stupid reason, you're listening to the...
Insufferable... I fucked it up.
Great name for a podcast, morons.
Thanks, John.
Perfect. The perfectly fine...
Insufferable Bastards.
If those of you that are into podcasts like to listen to that kind of stuff...
Oh, that was our... Hey! Matt Isto.
Yeah. Sorry, that wasn't me.
No, that was my new beep button. We have a curse button. Take it away, Bri.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Insufferable Bastards, a podcast about a little bit of everything. Tonight we are joined by Matt Maisto of Mondo Creepy.
Hello, everybody.
And Mike Lane of Music, Movies, and More.
Yes.
And I have no idea if any of that is correct. And I'm also always joined by Carlos Danger.
I love Judge Dredd. I absolutely love Judge Dredd.
That's right. I love
Judge
Dredd.
And tonight's topic, it's Christmas in July. We are talking about, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? I guess this topic came up. I believe Carlos and his family were watching Die Hard, and you just posted a little comment on, hey, this movie, Die Hard's not a Christmas movie. And I guess a barrage of responses, people asking to unfriend you, people arguing
to block
with you.
Me.
Yes. Yeah.
Some people like definitively stating that it is and I'm wrong, but then offering no evidence or examples.
Those
or
are probably
opinion.
People that also like European Christmas vacation.
Right.
So, you know.
And Halloween 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with Halloween 3.
I'm not a
Halloween
fan.
Halloween 3 is a perfectly good movie.
Yeah. A Halloween movie.
Yeah.
But I introduced my son the other day. He's 10 and I was like, we've watched The Road Warrior, we watched Predator. Predator he was kind of right. Like bored by. And I was really? let's watch Die Hard. And I went into it thinking, like, I mean, I've seen Die Hard 100 times, haven't seen it in a long time. And I've definitely not seen it since this whole Die Hard is a Christmas movie movement started. So it's probably been like 10 years. And so I went in with the mindset, all right, my wife is on the couch with me, my kids sitting in between us. I went in, let me see what's Christmassy about this movie. Because I never thought of it that way when I saw it in the movie theater when it came out in July 1988. Wasn't a Christmas movie then. I don't remember anybody talking about that.
Then. I'm
wasn't
curious.
Any of the ads.
All these people that say it's a Christmas movie probably had TNT or TBS, one of those, and they probably owned the rights during December and just played it during December. It was the one movie they had, and it's just been overplayed. I never got that connection. I think, I never got that. Lethal Weapon is another one a lot of people say, although... That writer writes every one of his movies has a connection to Christmas.
Shane Black.
Yeah, Shane Black. I couldn't think of it.
Who is in Predator? That's right.
Yep. Yes.
There you go. We were talking about Predator earlier. So
yeah, I thought like all right, you know, Christmas movie. I was trying to figure out like when did this trend start? You know, and it's only. I mean, it's not. Time is flying. I saw like 2011. It kind of dates back to. It seemed to jump off maybe Twitter. Maybe it was a hashtag. Some. I assume hipster dude was like, oh yeah, Die Hard's a Christmas movie. And then they were like, if you look, there were like something like 10 best of Christmas lists that came out in 2011, best Christmas movies of all time. And they all suddenly list Die Hard, all in 2011.
Really?
Yeah. So, and it was like Empire, like, you know, some of the hipster listicle type websites. So
that
I'm a little
hipster bandwagon jumping is what that was.
Yeah. It kind of feels like that. I mean, and it's like, I feel kind of bad. Cause it's like, hey, if it's your tradition now, cause a lot of people, a guy said on my thread and I just put on Facebook, by the way, I watched the movie. I love Die Hard. I think it's one of the greatest action movies of all time. You know, it's like that, The Road Warrior, Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark and Die Hard. So I really like the movie and I like seeing it again. I didn't get the Christmas vibe. But yeah, it's hard to sort of, you don't want to insult people if this is their Christmas marathon or Christmas tradition or their new Christmas tradition. But I would say you probably weren't doing that before 2011. And, you know, hey, if your tradition was born from a hashtag, I guess more power to you, you know? That's you know, I don't know.
Just because it takes place during Christmas doesn't make it a Christmas movie, because there's nothing that mentions Christmas in the movie.
It's like saying Jaws is a 4th of July movie.
What's that?
It's like saying Jaws is a 4th of July movie.
That's a great analogy. That's an excellent analogy. Yeah.
There's been this movement the last decade to sort of, I don't know, it's almost like there's always a month of something, or it's the week of whatever, to raise awareness for whatever. And it's like that's seeped into our movie culture with people. There's always, you got to watch a certain movie at a certain time, and it's going to be a group experience. We all have to Twitter about it and use the same hashtag. I don't know. And I mean, the thing about Die Hard in general, like I said, it's a great movie. Like watching it again, if you look back to like what won or what was nominated and what won Best Picture in 1988, Rain Man.
Wow.
Not a movie that has, you know, stood the test of time. The nominees for Best Picture were The Accidental Tourist, right? The Larry Kasdan movie. We all watch that once a year.
Is William Hurt in that?
I don't know. I think so.
Yeah. Gina Davis won.
Gina Davis.
Yeah.
Dangerous Liaisons. You know, that's that classic. Mississippi Burning with Gene Hackman.
Love that movie though. Oh.
Working Girl. Eleni. So. I'd argue that, and then I think Barry Levinson won for Rain Man for Best Director, but I'd argue that John McTiernan should have won. Looking back, should have won for Die Hard. Like, it's an action masterpiece, man. Like I'm looking at the list and I'm seeing even in, and that was the same year Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ came out. But okay. I mean, I think Die Hard's better than any of those movies I just listed. So I'd say that it should have won.
It's still the definitive Bruce Willis movie.
Absolutely.
I think it's a definitive 80s action movie too, more so than any of the Schwarzenegger or the Stallones, because it stands on it. Like, it proved that you didn't need Stallone or Schwarzenegger in the movie to make it an action movie.
And then the fact that it was Bruce Willis from the show Moonlighting, which was a comedy, people had such doubts, because it's like, why is this comedic actor from Moonlighting trying to make his way into movies? And that just really surprised people even more. Plus the fact that it's one of the best movie going experiences I ever had, because it was just cheering. You're on the edge of your seat. You don't really know what's going to happen next. And then, you know, at the ending, that surprise with the cop, you know, shooting the bad guys, just so many great things happened. And it was such a wild ride as well. So just a lot of fun.
And I guess in talking in terms of, about Bruce Willis.
What were these people? All right. I have a question.
Wait, hold on. Bruce Willis not only was trying to make the transition from TV to the big screen, I guess in those Q polls or whatever they had, people had a negative opinion of him.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting good press at the time. I think it was like around the Bruno years when he was like, he wouldn't do interviews.
He had done Blind Date.
The movie Sunset came out the same year. Blake Edwards, who should have stopped making movies like 25 years earlier, that came out that same year. But in terms of a Christmas movie, like, I think one thing you got to kind of establish, you know, what's your definition of a Christmas movie? Like, that's what it has a lot of Christmas in it, a lot of Christmas references. But to me, I was like, okay, so if it's a Christmas movie, Christmas has to play an integral role to the plot somehow, either the theme of Christmas, the spirit of Christmas or whatever, or like, you know, it's somehow got to be integral to the plot. And I think the big weakness with Die Hard and the real reason I don't think it's a Christmas movie, you could take every element of Christmas out of that movie
and still make the same movie.
Yeah. Same movie, great movie, even down to some of the sight gags. There's that scene, because when you say it's not a Christmas movie in that Facebook thread, which I wasn't trying to troll anybody, I just felt like I didn't expect any response to that. But anyway, in one of the things that somebody posted was like, well, what about the scene that they just put an image of the guy, the terrorist, the first terrorist he kills, he delivers him down the elevator and it says, now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
You just got to take out ho, ho, ho. Yeah. And you still have the exact same comedic relief. So yeah, that was the Christmas stuff in it is very superficial. Yep. And I was worried about blabbing on, but I'm going to do it anyway, because I have this stupid 3 pages of notes in front of me here.
Wow.
I was struck right at the beginning where, you know, you always remember, oh, it's a Christmas party, right? It's a Christmas party. They're at a Christmas party. the first line from the boss, Takagi, was that his name? Am I saying that right? I might not be. But anyway, the big sort of VP of whatever he was, he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I congratulate each and every one of you for making this one of the greatest days in the history of the Nakatomi Corporation." That party is there to celebrate a giant deal they had just done. It, even in the script, it says, "Oh, there's Christmas. It's decorated for Christmas, but it's not. It doesn't say Christmas party in the script. It doesn't even describe it exactly as a Christmas party." And the first thing the guy does is talk about how it's been this great day and they made $1 billion. A couple of scenes later, Holly, Bruce Willis's wife, McClane's wife, gets a gift. Right, and you're like, "Oh, it's Christmas." No, she got a Rolex for her part in the deal. So that was. You know, this whole thing, oh, it's a Christmas. They're talking about closing a deal. That's emphasized more than Christmas Eve in this movie. Then they're like, there's other people. Let me see if I can bring it up real fast. My color's going to change. But I read like, all right, so the Catholic Church actually put this on one of their morally objectionable movies, right? So, I mean, you got that. The Catholic Church doesn't think it's a Christmas movie. But there are some Catholics. I found this great blog, Patheos.com, where it's 6 reasons why Die Hard is and always will be a Christmas movie. Because there's a significant amount of people who say this is not only a Christmas movie, that it's like the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
That's an atheist website, so they may very well be trolling just Christmas in general. So,
oh, okay. Well, here's what, like, it doesn't sound like that, though. It takes place with Christmas Eve, many of the trappings of the hero, blah, blah, blah. The central figure is a good man.
That's every movie.
Yeah.
Whose wife's blah, blah, blah. But I would argue right at the beginning there, my point is, if this is a Christmas movie, we're introduced to John McClane and he's on the airplane and he has a little banter with the guy sitting next to him. And immediately he gives googly eyes to a stewardess. I don't know if within the first 5 minutes of the movie, he's randomly flirting. We know he's there and he's not in California to rush home for Christmas Eve dinner. He doesn't say like, "Oh, I'm here for the holidays. Oh, I just got in, blah, blah, blah." It's not like Planes, Trains, Automobile where he's got this mission. Like, Christmas isn't involved at all. He's there because he wouldn't move to California because he wanted to remain a cop in New York. And his wife's a very successful businesswoman and she moved away for this great job.
You got to You got to put in your time to get the pension.
Right. His exact words is like, because he's some kind of super cop. You know what I mean? Like, right even there. And he's such a good man. Then in the airport, he oogles some girl's butt right away.
Oh, Bruce Willis is going to do what Bruce Willis is going
to
do.
Maybe those were improvised. Then we're introduced to, what's his name, Argyle, or whatever the heck the limo driver's name is. Argyle proposes to get him some women. Later in the movie, Argyle's trying to get a booty call. Christmas Eve? Like, who does? I mean, Christmas Eve, that's like the one night, you got to go hang out with the family.
Bringing the snow.
What'd you say?
Nothing. I said Argyle was probably also going to bring the snow.
Oh, that's right. But you know what I mean? Like, but none of that says Christmas to me. Like, hitting on random people in the airport, deciding whether or not to, like, solicit a prostitute. That doesn't sound like Christmas to me. So, like, if you're going to point out. What'd you say?
Well, not your kind of Christmas.
You know what? But traditional, in movie sense,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's like, no claymation reindeer.
This is the movie you put on every year. This is your elf, or this is your It's a Christmas Story.
That's just
the beginning.
If you take Christmas out of a Christmas story, you're not going to have a movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. For me, it's very simple. A Christmas movie is about Christmas.
Right.
Period. You know, you look at A Christmas Story, which is about the buildup to the big day being Christmas and this kid and what he wants, his big gift, the shotgun, you know, that's all he's dreaming about for waking up Christmas morning and getting that. There's, even at the end of Die Hard, there's nothing about the power of Christmas. No one's coming together to open up gifts. No one's saying, you know, sorry, we missed, you know, Christmas Eve, but we got all Christmas Day to celebrate Christmas. There's none of that.
His catchphrase isn't, "Ho ho, mother effers." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. It's brought up as a plot point, but I think, in my opinion, the only reason it's in the movie at all is just so they can have an excuse as to why the skyscraper is so empty. You know, that's But even that is dropped away because you see from basically the floor above where the Christmas party or celebration of a big deal party is happening, it's all under construction. So you don't even need it from that perspective. Because I don't know. Christmas is sort of brought up at the beginning, but it just doesn't come back at all.
Also, none of the cops complain about getting overtime or demanding overtime on Christmas.
There's nothing. The newsroom at one point, they go into the newsroom, is like 100% packed. They're not talking about Christmas. They're not talking about, oh, I want to get home to the wife and kids because it's Christmas Eve. I got to wrap presents. None of it comes up. It's all superficial. Somebody pointed out they play Run DMC's Christmas in Hollis, but that's played for comedic effect, and it's kind of cringy. It's like, oh yeah, the one black guy in the, well, there's two black guys in the movie, but the black young guy is playing rap music, you know, it's,
and just that
like
was safe rap back then, you know what I mean? That was like acceptable for a Hollywood movie.
It's a little cringy. It's not the, it's not, that doesn't make it a Christmas movie. There's also a random, of course, a Latina maid.
There's no snow. There's no
California,
snow. But still, like, you could, they could all be like, oh, at the end of the movie, the snow would start coming down. They do that in tons of Hollywood movies.
Well, they don't even mention the big Christmas parade that happens in L.A. every year.
There's nothing. Well, that's what's also kind of weird about the whole movie that I know. I mean, there's like there's nothing exists outside that skyscraper in this movie. You know what I mean? Like, their whole surrounding area seems dead, which I guess you could argue, well, that's because it's Christmas Eve. But yeah, I just think the whole Christmas thing is so superficial.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed, I never noticed this watching Die Hard before, but I was struck by how much it sort of makes fun or parodies or it's a little dark comedy about like corporatism and the whole Wall Street culture and the whole, I mean, the time it came out, that was the height of the whole greed is good thing.
The
80s, right. Yeah.
The big 80s.
And I would like, this makes fun of it better than I think American Psycho did, because American Psycho was so obvious, but this is really subtle. I mean,
who's the guy, you know, Hans Booby, that guy, you know, trying to just
Harry Ellis, his character name is, that guy should have got a best supporting actor.
That guy was awesome.
He embodies like the bad capitalism, the in it for himself. Yep. Sorry, Mark. Mike, I interrupted.
It's okay. No, you got it.
But yeah, exactly. And Hans himself is a businessman. He's dressed like a businessman. Half his crew, I mean, it's such a weird mix-up of cultures and everything in that whole crew of robbers. But a lot of them look like they're just some type of, you know, business white. They're white-collar criminals, essentially. Yeah. And then it's very interesting because Hans brings up, and it's alluded to a few times, that this company itself was up to no good in whatever dealings they had. Because it's not surprising that sort of this environmentalist or leftist or radical group that they pretend to be for about 5 minutes of the movie with like a big wink would show up at the talk. What's it called? Nakatomi. Yeah, because they allude to like it's so. And in terms of the whole Christmas thing, like I researched, OK, well, what do the makers of the film say about this? Mm-hmm. And it's a little split. And I think a lot of them are joking. Like one of the co-screenwriters says, yeah, it's definitely a Christmas film. You know, we've got Bruce Willis walking on glass. That's our Christ. You know, it's as Christmas as white Christmas. And then Willis, I guess, like what all he has said, it's a Bruce Willis movie. It's you know, he's obviously joking.
No, he's not.
And like, you know, there's even like, you can go find like somebody did like statistical, how much is Christmas mentioned in the movie, the marketing. It was definitely not marketed as a Christmas movie at all. Like they just, it was action movie.
Why
they
marketed July.
They marketed the building more than they did Bruce Willis when it first came out. And then there's a great interview with Crazy John McTiernan that, maybe I'll link to when this comes out. He went on like a lengthy discussion of it. It looked like he's out in on a ranch or somewhere where he's got like a house on a lake, and he sat a cell phone down that's kind of angled up at him, and he's not looking at the camera. He's off like this.
And should have got every that Pelicano while, just kinda, guy to film him.
Huh?
He should have got that Pelicano guy to film him. They were buddies.
That's a whole other thing. But he goes on like this 12-minute dissertation that starts off talking about paintings and how in a story everything matters, and you put the words a certain way. Long story short, because he's like, he's like batshit crazy. He's like, I meant it more as sort of an attack on capitalism. It's more attack on those times. But hey, you know, and it's for the common man. This is the movie was made for, you know, Bruce Willis as a common man is the hero, and how the controlling things like the corporations that both the VP and the guy that Mike mentioned and the Hans himself, they all represent sort of the ruling class. But he's like, he's accepted the fact that it's become accepted as a Christmas movie. Like, he's okay with that. So that was very interesting for him. And yeah, what Brian's talking about, he ended up going to jail. John McTiernan.
Yeah.
Because he got arrested for lying to the FBI.
Spying on people?
With the Anthony Pelicano thing.
We're paying for information.
So McTiernan directed the Rollerball remake, just a god awful movie. Ugh. And I guess he was in a feud with the studio over what direction to make that movie. And so allegedly he hired that guy, that private eye to the stars, Pelicano, Anthony, whatever his name is, to do some surveillance, I guess, on one of the producers of Rollerball. So the guy's whole, I mean, that's like his whole career fell apart, and to the point where he had to liquidate his assets because he fought the lawsuit for so, I mean, he fought the arrest for so long. He had a plea deal, then took it back, and then ended up going to jail longer than he would have. So it's sort of, his career took like a really bizarre turn. But I mean, he's kind of on the fence about whether it is a Christmas movie. I mean, just looking at my notes here, I said like it's an anti-corporatism that shows up as much as the Christmas elements. Looking back at that era of film, you know, it was pretty clear in 1988 what was a Christmas movie and what was not.
It
was
that's what I don't get. It was totally like, you know, I mean, I understand if this is marketed later on as a Christmas movie to sell, because I think you could buy the buildings a Christmas. I mean, it's a Christmas ornament and it's a this, it's a that. But I mean,
now before then, you couldn't. Back then, you could not.
Yeah, it was a far thing.
There was no kitschy, diehard Christmas merchandise.
There was nothing like there that you do. He didn't even walk in with packages. You know what I mean? A Christmas movie.
Right.
Someone has to have a Christmas gift.
Yeah, like, I'm saying, at the end of the movie, there's like, you talk about thing
where they're carrying a bunch of gifts and
he's got one stuffed animal, but you don't even know who he's giving that to. Yeah, it looks like he's giving it to a stripper.
But you could bring that home from a date, you know, because you haven't seen your wife or your kid in months.
No, man. Yeah, Matt was. Yeah, at the end of the movie, there's no.
There's no exchange of gifts. There's no talk about the power of Christmas, or, you know, I love everybody. It's Christmas. Let's all forgive everyone and start over. There's none of that.
The people who
no Christmas redemption.
The people who think Die Hard's a Christmas movie, they're trying to grasp at straws to fit it into this narrative that they've constructed. They're just trying to find anything. Oh, see, they mentioned Christmas. It's a Christmas movie. It says ho ho ho. It's a Christmas movie.
And I really think it was a TNT or a TBS that just overplayed this every December. Yeah. And they like forced it into our lexicon movie.
And just two things. Like, I think, and I swear to God, like if TNT or TBS put on like Insatiable with Marilyn Chambers, hardcore, like 1972 pornography every Christmas.
It's like 79.
I stand corrected.
The second one was much better.
No way.
Special 2 was
but
much better.
If they just shoved that down our throats on Christmas on cable instead of A Christmas Story, we'd all say, Insatiable is a great Christmas movie. And the other thing, so going back to a point that Mike Lane said earlier, somebody in my thread brought up, like, what are you saying? Like, Silent Night, Deadly Night? That's not a Christmas. Is that a Christmas movie? That has dark content. No, and I would say, it's more a Christmas movie than Die Hard. Because
that's a movie about Christmas. There's a guy dressed as Santa Claus killing people on Christmas Eve, and everyone's freaking out because, oh my God, everyone's dying and it's Christmas.
Like, there's no movie without Christmas in that.
Yeah.
And it's not like, and this thing is, wait, one second. The logic that, it's got a lot of Christmas elements superficially, then you could argue that the French Connection at the beginning where Gene Hackman, that takes place around Christmas, Gene Hackman is dressed as Santa when he runs that first drug guy down and does the whole picking your feet in Poughkeepsie. He's dressed as Santa Claus. All right, sorry. Not a Christmas movie. French Connection, not a Christmas movie. Brian,
Fast
go ahead.
Times
sorry.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High would be a Christmas movie because there's some holiday scenes in it, like the mall during Christmas, right?
Right.
Right.
Tracy even says, Christmas sucks. I hate it. I guess Fast Times at Ridgemont High is a Christmas movie.
I can't argue that.
I mean, it's my kind of point was going to be object mute because uh moot because you're kind of said it before, like you're not objecting to this being an action movie. You're just objecting that the point is there's not enough Christmas in it. It's not a Christmas movie. Not that it's like, it could be violent. It could be sexist. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. If it was, but it's not about Christmas. I mean, again, I don't remember any time he said, I'm home for the holidays. And if he does say it, it's not impactful.
You could insert any holiday. You could replace you could replace Christmas and Die Hard with any holiday, and I think you'd have the same effect. It just doesn't matter. It plays no important role to the story whatsoever. It affects none of the motivation of the characters in any way whatsoever. It's not a Christmas movie. It's not a cop movie either. It's an adventure movie, right? It's an action movie. Yeah. It's a summer blockbuster, god damn it. Yeah. One thing about rewatching it again, how Bruce Willis is great in it. You know, it's just those tight confined spaces, you know, mm-hmm. you feel for him when he's, you know, trying to get from one place to another and all that. But okay, so he does some crazy stuff though. The scene where he dresses up, he defiles a corpse, right? He's facing off against 12 bank robbers or terror. Let's just call them terrorists because it's funner to do that. And he takes the time, he kills, you know, the ballerina's brother, right? What's his name? Alexander, whatever his name is, who's like the chief heavy. Right. The first guy, I believe the first terrorist killed is that guy's brother in the movie,
yes.
right?
Right, yes.
So Willis takes the time to put a Santa hat on him, the Christmas element for comedic effect, very superficial, wrap him in a chair, write a note on, why? Like that, you just committed a felony in California. And he tells him, I'm still here and I have a machine. Like, it's funny. But I just was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever, why would you do that? And another scene where Willis takes the C4 because what he feels like the cop isn't paying sufficient attention to him or something like that, and he throws it down the elevator shaft and blows out the bottom of the building.
Yeah,
I remember seeing that in the theater. However they shot this movie, it was like extra wide, whatever, when you saw it in the theater, and how it like you could like feel the building explode. But that makes no sense.
And then he says, "I think he's a cop."
Like, there's just like, why does he blow up the bottom part of the building? I don't understand. Like, what's the objective there? I guess just to let these guys got stuff going on. They got these explosives, and the police chief, you know, kind of says like, hey, why did you just? I was with the chief at that point. The chief is like, why did he just blow up half the building? Why did he I didn't understand why he did that. So there's a couple of things like that where you're like, what the hell is John McClane doing? John McClane is out of his goddamn mind. The fire.
Then Robert Davi stole every scene that he was in.
That's right. Yeah. Right. And it's like, I like it. Yeah. And he's got the same name, like the two, whatever the hell their names is.
Oh, right. Right. And then it's
just like, we did it numb.
Yeah.
That is great. Yeah. That's a quintessential 80s action scene where they contemplate like how many hostages will die. That's acceptable. You know, it's that was really good.
Or it's the war between the FBI and the police department, or the FBI or the CIA. You know, it's that trope that goes on. It's like, oh, here comes the FBI, and we're gonna fight them too. We're fighting ourselves here.
And the higher you go up the chain of command, the dumber the people get, and the more annoying. It's got all that great stuff in it, but not a Christmas movie. I just don't, like Matt said at the end of the movie, you don't feel Christmas in any way. So I don't know. Like I think half of me thinks, but I mean, I'm a moron. You know what I mean? I don't watch 99% of what's on Disney, whatever it is, Plus or whatever the hell it's called.
Plus?
I don't. Yeah. Like I just feel so out of touch with the current, what's popular. Cause I think like this will die off as a Christmas movie. I think like as these streaming or these cable channels go away,
I think it's what you said, that people now are just indoctrinated into just putting on this movie during Christmas, which is fine. I mean, but
also it's a great social media talking point now. People are going to defend this on social media forever.
Well, yeah,
you'll have people who'll watch it ironically and saying it's a Christmas movie. You'll have people doing it just to troll anybody. Then you have people with, like you said, Carlos, with your friends saying, well, what do you mean? Like it's become such a part of their routine and their rituals and their identity that they will defend it so much that you're getting into a Facebook argument just based on that, with everything that's going on, this is what you're screaming.
Same
about,
thing so. They did when they defended Trump.
Oh my God.
Well, I don't know. Hold
I'm joking.
I was going to say, yeah. Cause it wasn't like, I thought, you know, the thread that we were talking about, it didn't get.
I was hoping that they would write angry letters and we'd keep it going, you know. That's all. I'm, you know.
No. I was just trying to put my reasons why. And then people were pointing out what people do. They say, well, then if this, you know, what about Silent Night, Deadly Night? And like, I don't know. I like we said, we can differentiate between the two. But then people will just keep on pointing out the Christmas elements in the movie. But again, it can have. I don't know. There are Christmas elements and a lot of them. It's a Christmas. Actually, it was Shane French.
He argues with everything we say. Anything to the point.
Yeah, but he made a good point. He said it's Christmassy, and then somebody said it's Christmassy. No, but I agree with that though. It's Christmassy.
Does this mean that the French Connection was about Shane French?
See. Oh yeah, there you go. They do have the same Shane T. LaFrench.
Oh,
I believe his name is.
Yeah,
no, I think we make that up. I think we add the love.
I know. No, we did. We did. For years, I thought that was his action. I thought he had the coolest name ever, and it's not. No,
but it's establishing, and this point, this is a great point raised earlier. What does it mean for it to be a Christmas movie? And if people cannot agree on the definition of a Christmas movie, you're just going to have an argument forever. You're going to have an argument about what it means to be a Christmas movie before even getting to Die Hard. So you have to at least agree on what a Christmas movie means.
I'm also surprised in this woke environment now that we can even celebrate Christmas in like where everyone can agree that it's a Christmas movie. I'm offended because it's not a holiday. Movie.
I'm going to call this. I'm now when this goes on Twitter, I'm going to say, yeah, Die Hard is not a holiday movie.
Yes.
Just to see if anybody gets that.
I am all for that. I'm all for that.
But anyway, anybody else got anything else on?
Yeah, I do, because I know Shane listens to us
sweating
all the time. So I have a question for
him. I don't know if he does.
No, he does, because he said every time we post something, he always disagrees with us in our
So does Facebook Sir John, page. Formerly of he's the Pint of Comics radio.
I mentioned it to you guys this morning. I am 10 minutes into Nick Cage versus Willy Wonka and the Willy Wonderland WandaVision. I'm 10 minutes in. It is the worst piece of crap I've ever seen in the 10 minutes that I've seen.
It looks like a sci-fi film. It looks like something you'd see on the Sci-Fi Channel.
I need to know if I should go another. Does it get better? To the point where Nick Cage has not said a word. He just drives a car, like his tire gets blown out.
I think thing is like this is his silent movie. I read somewhere like he has like no dialogue.
Really? Because then they have him do a mission, clean out the park.
Well, the interview that I've unearthed for my purposes for an upcoming episode of Mondo Creepy, the next episode, in the interview, Nick Cage likes to refer to himself as the California Klaus Kinski, and he referred to himself that way several times.
Okay. Oh, that guy's the best. Who has, I guess it was it Rogan on Howard Stern was telling his Nick Cage story, Brian, like within the last month?
Yes.
About how,
it was for Green Hornet, maybe, right? Green Hornet or Green Arrow? Which one is not, which one's the Marvel?
You're talking Green Lantern or?
I don't
Hawkeye
know.
It's whatever, if you're talking bow and arrow guy, Hawkeye is the Marvel guy.
It's whoever.
You meant Seth Rogen.
Who did
right?
Seth Rogen?
Yeah, play. Seth Rogen. What did I say?
You said Green Hornet.
Oh, sorry.
So that's Green Hornet.
Yeah.
I guess he came in to play a bad guy, and he basically. It sounds like it's the same character that James Franco played in Spring Breakers, and he came in.
Oh,
and
he did a Jamaican accent. That's
he
right.
He did a Jamaican accent with crazy hair, and the whole time he was like hanging out. And they just didn't know what was going on because there he was in a meeting and he just wouldn't come out of character. And then when he could tell that they weren't into it,
he thought he was kidding.
Yeah. And he just left. He was really mad at Seth Rogen because he said, oh, you told James Franco about that because James Franco did a similar thing.
There is a great, it just came out, the Nick Cage, well, this will be, by the time this comes out, it'll be a week or two old, but, Pig? I guess he's doing press for Pig, and it's getting good reviews, but they pointed out, like, yeah, Nick Cage has made, like, 30 direct-to-video on-demand movies, but he's kind of like, I'm digging it, you know? And I thought like, well, it's kind of great. Cause he, I mean, I don't know anything about finance and movies, but I mean, if you have a script or whatever, and you're shopping around or you have a movie you want to make, it's got to make it easier to get those independent dollars if Nicolas Cage is attached.
Oh,
right?
God, he's like,
yeah. So like what a like impact he's having. I mean, every once in a while, Mandy is good. That movie,
Dog Eat Dog.
That was great. So he's doing good.
Is another one that people seem to like.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but that, yeah, I've read that that's good too. So I think more power to him. I'd rather see Nick Cage do, and he's doing a lot better than like Travolta. You know what I mean?
I personally think he's doing some of the most interesting work of his career right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm really fascinated by this part of his career. He's not just doing
this.
Ghost Dog 8 or whatever the hell it was, Ghost Rider.
I wish he wasn't. I don't know. My only problem is the cheaper movies he does, there's less attention to hair and makeup and looks, and like he needs sometimes his beards are a little too dark or his hairline's a little too, like it can be distracting.
Even in Mandy, it was a little like.
Yeah. And that's a low budget. So I don't know. I bet he's making
all those choices himself. Or he's already like conceptualized the character and he's walked in already doing his full blown method thing, saying, this is it. This is what I'm bringing.
100%
you can't
agree with that.
It.
But at a higher budget, like instead of just putting, you know, all right, this black hair dye has to last 30 days, instead of putting all of it in so it lasts 30 days, like at least he has a team of like the bigger the budget, he seems to always look a little bit better and get away with doing his weird things. Because again, this Willy Wonka movie that he's in, holy crap, man. It is like he must have got a ruler out and did his jawline, like his for his beard. And it is like just for men, just done today. Like, it's a little distracting. I'm all for the crazy stuff because he did that. Like, that movie, Joe.
Great
come
movie.
On, man.
It was
like,
good.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And
quiet Nick Cage.
Yeah. And like, so I hope he does do.
He still says that his favorite movie that he's ever done is Vampire's Kiss.
And that's not.
Which I think speaks volumes about him. I think that tells you everything.
It looked like he had a lot of fun. It looked like he had a lot of fun doing that movie.
It's got to be Raising Arizona.
I wish I could have seen him as Superman. I wish that movie would have been made. I would have been interested in his choices as Superman. He's such a big Superman fan too. So that would have been cool.
That was Stern recently shared on YouTube his, I guess, an older interview he did with Tim Burton.
Tim Burton, yeah.
And it's really good. Yeah, Tim Burton actually comes off really well talking about how he was so excited to do that, but the studio just had like, they were just all about whatever, like, Happy Meal they were gonna they wanted him to wear flaming boots like the whole they're
have
all,
you ever
all
seen the them. Documentary about the about how the
yeah.
Superman lives
yeah. A couple of years ago.
I'd love for them to actually make an and just take that script and do an animated version of that script and have Nicolas Cage do the voice and, you know, directed by Tim Burton, and just do it animated and just like really see the craziness that was supposed to unfold.
That'd well if you hashtag that idea.
Yeah.
Hashtag it. Burton makes Superman, or, you know, with Nick Cage, whatever word
Burton
you're going to use.
Animated cut.
Yeah.
Will that do it? Yeah. Put that on Mondo Creepy, man.
Burton.
Release the Burton
Cage.
Cut.
Release the Burton cartoon. Hey, Matt, when's the next Mondo Creepy coming out?
We are shooting in about 3.5 weeks, actually 3 weeks. So hopefully it will be out sometime in the beginning of September. I really wanted to get it out in time for Monster Mania, but we just couldn't pull it together in time. So that right now that's the timetable.
And Monster Mania is in August. Middle of August, sorry. It's so hot down here, I can't even think. we're going to be vendors. Although Sir John from Pint of Comics Radio took offense that we use the term vendors because he said vendors mean we're going to be selling something. And he asked if I was going to be selling kisses. But what else do you call it? You buy a table at a horror convention. What else do you call yourself?
What are you? Are you just there promoting the podcast?
We do like live podcasts.
Oh.
Yeah, we record the podcast. We're always on
Radio Row. They have three other podcasts, and we're like right there.
God damn, Mike, would it kill you to listen to the podcast once in a while? We have like 19 shows from the last. What do you think I got this crap for? basement.
I know you're getting. I thought maybe Brian was selling some of his stuff at the table too, like the skulls and all that.
That's on the down low. That's,
oh, okay. Halloween will be coming up.
We don't have our Connecticut paperwork.
Well, again, we're also not really there to sell anything other than, you know, have a little chance to meet new people and talk movies. And it's a way to promote the podcast. I mean, but that's the other thing. What do you want to say? If we don't say we're vendors, what are we, promoters?
I don't know what to say. We're appearing. We'll be appearing at.
Sounds even douchey.
You're valued customers.
You're paying to make an appearance.
We're guests that aren't famous enough to be considered
because
guests.
Because if you go there as media, why should you pay? You're media. They should let you in for free.
Those days are over. The blogs ruin that. Because that, like, it used to be you could go to, you get a press pass to go to one of those conventions.
Yeah.
And you kind of still can, maybe, but everybody with a podcast starts harassing the guests.
Everybody's like, a social media influencer.
Yeah, so what's even the point anymore? And they specifically ask, and I totally get it. Like, you can't go up to whoever, Kane Hodder, and start. Although, I mean, I've done it. I, you know, at the last couple of conventions that we went to, when we were known as the Mobile Horror Companion.
Say you're with WXRK Radio.
Right, yeah. I was listening. Who he had on, that St. Louis guy had on Zolar. Was Zolar the angry guy that would do? He was like he was Stuttering John after Stuttering. Oh no, Gary Goldman.
No, Gary Goldman.
Yeah,
Gary Goldman.
That's an angry one.
Garver.
Gary Garver.
Okay, sorry.
He's the guy.
Sorry. He's the guy. Yes. I am Darth Nihilus.
Single greatest.
And then he got into a fight. He got into a fight with Darth Nihilus. Yeah.
Well, he just started. He was just so weirdly aggressive towards him, just right off the bat.
Yeah,
I'm Darth Nihilus. Anyway, that guy appeared on that St. Louis YouTube show where the guy's interviewing all the Howard Stern peripheral people.
So does
people.
Ron really Zimmerman, good. And I haven't listened to it yet. Ron Zimmerman, I guess, was a writer, dated Cher. Stern would always talk about him.
Yes.
But this guy goes off on Stern like, oh, you know, he doesn't return my phone. I can't wait to hear that one.
Oh, he told an amazing story, Ron Zimmerman, on Stern about he was about to hang himself.
Yeah.
And then Jay Leno calls and leaves a message on the answering machine.
Really?
So he says, I wonder what Jay is doing. And he gets down he takes the rope out. And he said Jay Leno saved his life. Had Jay Leno not called him, he probably would have died. And Leno had no idea. You know, he's like, hey, I just want to know what you're doing for the holidays. Come over. And that's what saved his life. And he's still
alive. That would make a perfect ending to a holiday movie.
And Leno said, come on over. We're going to watch Die Hard. Merry Christmas.
That would have made more sense than calling Die Hard a movie about a Christmas movie. So there. Damn it.
All right. That's it. That's our timer.
All right. Oh. Wow. So, I
didn't know. That's
a buzzer.
Wow. I don't know. I'm going through my thing right now. Oh, this is my favorite. All right. So that was Mondo Creepy. He went off to take a dump.
Right,
Matt Mace.
I love my dog in the room.
Oh yeah, all right. So visit him on YouTube or Facebook, Mondo Creepy, or Twitter. And Mike Lane is from the Music, Movies, and More podcast. Is that still going on, Mike? I haven't come across one in a little bit.
It's been a while. Like, my last episode was I reviewed Invincible, which is a great show on Amazon.
I enjoyed Invincible very much.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I gotta be inspired, and lately I just haven't been inspired by watching anything, but I started to read, there's an article in the New York Times, and it's called The Movies Are Back, But What Are Movies Now? Cinephiles and streaming fans can both claim victory, but as we better understand the new screen culture taking shape, it looks like we may all lose in the long run. So I may read that.
What the fuck are they talking about?
I don't know yet. I haven't read the article yet, so I want to look it over. I may comment on that.
Barry Diller was in some. They interviewed Barry Diller last week, and he said movies as we know it are over.
Personally,
I'm fine with it, man. I'll watch everything from my living room.
Yeah, me too.
I don't fit in the chairs.
I love movie theaters. I love them so much. But that being said, I'll watch movies from home. It's easy. You know, I just put it on my TV. So I think it's going to depend on the movie. I may see The Green Knight in the movie theater because that just looks probably stunning on the screen. And then the documentary about the Summer of Soul, just for the sound, just for the music, I may see that in the movie theaters.
I might go see Dune in the theater.
Oh, yeah, that too. So it's, you know, it may depend.
Even, Even I was impressed by that trailer. For I don't know nothing about Dune, you know, but
I've read the book.
I don't know anything about it, but that trailer, I was like, damn, this might be something different.
That trailer exhausted me. There's so much going on that I was tired after watching that trailer. I can't wait for that.
Spears, what about your other podcast?
My other podcast?
Yeah, you got any episodes planned?
No other plans. I will say, watch Dr. Death. Yo, check out Dr. Death if you can.
That's on Peacock, new streaming show.
Yeah,
right?
new streaming show. Yeah. Based on a podcast about a kind of a screwed up, overachieving, druggy doctor that really does some bad surgeries and gets bounced around, and it's a bunch of doctors trying to stop him.
Oh, okay. That kind of sounds like House, but I guess minus not being a...
No, it's not for... Yeah, this is like, you know, it's a guy that really severely hurts people, and he's not just on a couple pain pills because he has a bad back. Yeah. You know, he's doing lines in the back room.
And it's starring... Joshua Jackson.
Alec Baldwin, Christian Slater, Kelsey Grammer.
Wow.
It's
good cast.
It's a pretty good...
So going back to Die Hard, it's kind of the polar opposite of what it was in 1988. 1988 was, oh my God, you're a TV actor, you got to do movies. And now it just seems the opposite. It's all these heavy hitter movie stars are now doing TV. So
hell yeah.
Because where the character driven stories are.
And it's just longer. So you have time for the character to develop.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Spears, you worked on that. That's right. You just
I helped some of the effects. Yeah.
Nice.
Of the botched surgeries and stuff like that.
Yeah. We did a bunch of surgeries. Gross. One of Josh Torrey and his crew, and then
what's the name of his company?
Designs to Deceive.
Designs to Deceive. Okay, cool.
So yeah, we got to do all that, and I think it's. I watched because I'm cheap. I only watched the first three episodes because it came with my whatever Hulu or whatever. And why is that so funny?
I know, just because of the way they get you, you know what I mean? They'll put out a great show.
I can't.
And they'll give you three episodes. I know I've subscribed to every streaming. I'm Apple TV. I watch Ted Lasso.
That's supposed to be amazing, but
I'm a soccer fan and I haven't watched Ted Lasso.
It's good. It's not amazing.
Watch The Servant. That's another one I worked on.
What's it called?
The Servant on Apple TV.
Apple TV. You know what, though? I'll say this about Apple TV. They're trying to be HBO. They're trying to be old school HBO prestige stuff. You know, so.
I just can't anymore. There's too many.
I do it by accident. We mentioned this on the, that's why I was laughing, because I'm subscribed to so much stuff that I'm just like, I'll do the trial. Oh, they already have my credit card stuff. And then I, look at the, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah,
I may be forced to do Peacock next month because they have the Premier League. I don't want to do it, but I may have no choice.
I'm just upset because that show, Dr. Death, which while it's very good, and I know a little bit more, so I know what's coming. It started getting good, really good, and then it's like, oh, now you got to pay for it.
They know,
I'm
man.
Like, what the hell? Like, they deliberately, the first two episodes are good. That third episode, it sinks you in more, and it gets, and you're like, oh, and I think there's only eight episodes in this, and I'm like, I can't afford all this stuff.
The free trial's up. Now you got to cough up.
Ideally, I wish it was a la carte, or, wait for the DVD.
It'll never be that way. It'll never be.
Yeah, YouTube TV. Yeah. I saved money for 5 months, and now my cable bill, my YouTube TV shit is more than cable was when I canceled.
It's gonna have to get to a breaking point sometime.
Yeah. I have AT&T TV instead of cable, but when you also add in HBO Now and Netflix and Amazon Prime, it's just as much as cable.
It's the same thing. Yeah, I'm definitely paying more. It's embarrassing. And now the Top Chef is over, There's nothing else to watch on the regular TV. Because YouTube TV is basic cable. I'm paying $70 for just your basic, and then all the add-ons are like Matt just mentioned.
I haven't finished the shows I want to watch that are on my list. I just don't have the time to do it because there's so many shows.
All right. Let's end this one, damn it, before I pass out.
All right, guys.
Yeah, anyway, right, guys. That was everybody who's everybody. And my name is Carlos Danger, and I don't know where the outro music is because I lost it on this stupid thing. Oh, here it is. See you next time.
Later.
Peace.
What are you still doing here, old man? I'm gonna fuck you up.
Bob Odenkirk. Nobody.
Oh, it's from Nobody.